It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Tears of Evan continues here on the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast, brought to you by FanVice.com. Your one-stop shop for all your daily fantasy sports needs. FanVice has great tools, articles, even live streaming video casts. Follow them on Twitter at FanVice DFS and check out FanVice.com. Evan Silva has already checked out FanVice.com. He's the one that told me about him. Everybody's been checking out the tiers. Everyone's all over Evan's Roto World blurbs. Checking him out on Twitter at Evan Silva. I am at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter. We are going to get into Evan's tight ends this week, switching it up a little bit because we have a guest who we are very, very excited about with preseason kicking off tomorrow night. Let's do it. Actually, you know what? Before you hit it, Bri, I forgot to mention the redraft league and the NFL entries you guys entered that are being handed out. Fantasy Feast, two more contestants sent me sponsor confirmations. Congratulations, Jonathan Myers, Joe Crawford. You are in the league. Also want to congratulate a couple of guys that earned free MFL entries, Matthew Vincent and Scott Sheriff. You'll hear what Scott Sheriff did to get an MFL entry in a little bit. Now you can hit it, Bri.
Big Eater of the Week.
Well, we don't typically have a guest during the critically acclaimed Tears of Evan, but we've got a guest today for two reasons. Number one, three reasons. Number one, the tight end tiers aren't as long or as involved as the other tiers. Number two, he is from FanVice.com, which is one of the new sponsors of the Fantasy Feast. Number three, Evan says the guy is awesome, and he's got a great story about him. He is Fast Eddie Fear from FanVice.com. And Eddie, I mentioned it at the start of the show as per the sponsorship, but rather than me trying to explain to the listeners exactly what FanVice is and what you guys are doing, you have the floor, my friend, to give your little spiel before Evan starts hammering you with preseason DFS questions.
That sounds great. Although I think there may have been a huge mistake made here. I heard you guys talking about tight ends and football. I thought this was, I'm a big epicurist and I enjoy a good meal. I thought this was Fantasy Feast as in meals we could only dream about having, like, you know, the heart of a unicorn or something like that. This is something totally different?
Totally different, and I'm still debating whether or not that was funny, but it was a good effort.
Well, I do my best. You throw enough stuff against the wall, hopefully something sticks. Yeah,
I respect that. Listen, Eddie, anybody that listens to my podcast knows I'm batting about 50% with some of the jokes I try to make. Probably about 50%.
Hey, for a baseball
That's
player,
generous.
You're in the Hall of
That's
Fame
generous.
With that average. For a comedian, you're booed off the stage. But I'm going to hope to bring my average up as the call goes on. Yeah, despite current evidence on this podcast, what we've really tried to do at FanVice.com is put together some real personalities, some funny guys, some people to make the entire process of playing fantasy sports every day and looking into it a little bit more enjoyable and a little bit more entertaining. So we went out and tried to get the best personalities we can find. We're putting out short videos and obviously daily video shows and a lot of content that we hope is entertaining and engaging, because as great as it is and as much as I'm sure the three of us absolutely love it, doing fantasy sports day after day after day can be a bit of a grind. And so by making it a little more enjoyable, not only do you make it a less arduous task for those of us who are really devoted to it, but also you open up the door to giving fantasy content to people who really can't do the really deep dive, can't sit there and listen to a show or look at 1,000 statistics in a day and spend 3 hours on building some lineups. They just want to get done with work and maybe listen to a funny 5 or 10 minute video with some advice, and then throw down $50 on FanDuel or DraftKings and see how they do while they watch the game that night and drink a beer.
I love it. And so people can just go to fanvice.com basically for all your advice and videos and everything.
That's the plan. You can follow us on the Twitter at FanviceDFS. And should you be so inclined, despite my early failures on this show, you could follow me at FastEddieFear.
No failures, Eddie. From now on, when I think Fast Eddie, I will think unicorn hearts. That is not a failure. In and of itself, that is something to take moving forward. And more importantly, Evan evidently has some great story about you that he's all excited to tell. So go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, super excited to tell, because it was my – so after NFL season ends, you know, it gets kind of slow for my job. We start looking at free agents, start looking at players coming out of college football. But I like to play NBA DFS just to kind of remove my mind from football after thinking about it constantly for months and months on end. So I'm playing NBA DFS during the NBA playoffs. And throughout the regular season, the Golden State Warriors had this lineup that was called the Death Lineup, or the Lineup of Death. And it was like this, it's this super athletic lineup where I think they play Draymond Green at center. You know, and Draymond Green's like 6'8" or 6'7", so he's not your typical center. But the Oklahoma City Thunder were just taking it to the death lineup in the Western Conference Finals, and we kind of noticed, or I kind of noticed that in the previous game, Andrew Bogut had the best plus minus on the Golden State Warriors, and for a guy, you know, Andrew Bogut's like 7 foot. Slow, you know, can't move at all. So he seems like the worst possible matchup against a fast moving Oklahoma City Thunder offense. And so I go, you know, hey Eddie, I DM'd him on Twitter. I go, hey Eddie, Andrew Bogut, what do you think about him maybe getting more minutes in this particular game because his plus minus was the best on the team in the previous game? And Eddie goes, yeah, I'm all over Bogut. He sent me a link to this Periscope that he had done, and where he was talking about Andrew Bogut, and Andrew Bogut was minimum price for his price on FanDuel. And Andrew Bogut just erupts in this game. I mean, for a minimum price center, if it would have been a good game if he would have given you like 22 FanDuel points. Andrew Bogut gave us 40. I mean, I finished like first in this big tournament. I mean, it was just an absolutely glorious night. And it was due in huge part to Fast Eddie, who just made an incredible call. And Eddie could get the next 10 calls wrong, and this would always stand out to me as just an incredible call. So thank you, Fast Eddie. Thank you.
Oh, that's my pleasure. That's the great stories to hear back from people. There's times that I think making a good call requires a leap of faith or a lot of intuition. Mm-hmm. But this is really just more paying attention. If you listen to the post game comments and you listen to the coach discuss what had happened that game, he said, "Well, clearly, I think we played a lot better with Bogut out there, so we're going to look at that." And then the press conference the next day, he reiterated the same thing. And when you went back and looked at the stats, Bogut had a plus minus in the previous game of like, I don't know, I want to say plus 11 or plus 14, which, again, is the net scoring of the team while he's on the court, and no one else was in positive numbers, and they had gotten a run off the court. And if you went back and looked at the video, clearly he was playing Steven Adams really well, and I was like, you know, they're going to give this guy a ton of time, and at minimum price, especially with the limited player pool available when you're that deep into the playoffs, I said something I only say 3 or 4 times a year because I need to be absolutely certain. I would put this guy in every single lineup. I was sure they were going to move him from the dozen minutes or so he had been playing up to maybe 20, and instead they moved him well over 30, and he completely blew up. And there was some luck involved there with him being that productive, but that was definitely a good day.
And to that point, I mean, if you just looked at him on paper, he had a horrible series. Like, he was fouling out. You know, he couldn't stay on the floor. He looked so slow, but – yeah, it was awesome. All right, so Fast Eddie, let's talk some preseason DFS. What is your general strategy approaching preseason DFS?
Well, the first thing you usually need to say to people is you should play it. because there's all kinds of DFS contests and sites now, and a lot of people are purists to an extent in that they look at playing, I'm going to play baseball, I'm going to play basketball, I'm going to play football, and that's basically it. And you say preseason, they're like, no, I'm doing my baseball thing, and those games aren't real and they don't count, but the money still counts and the contests are still good. And so usually the first piece of advice is, yes, you should certainly play these. And the biggest reason why, there's a few good reasons I'll give you, but the biggest reason is that historically, over and over again, they have shown to be really soft fields relative to the regular season. What I mean by that is the average value of the lineup put in by the population in general is incredibly low. I want to appropriately cite my source for the following stat as Seth A. Yates on Twitter. That's at Seth A. Yates. Good follow, good math guy. Put some very well-constructed spreadsheets of both previous and future DFS contests, and looking at the first, there's been only one slate of preseason DFS so far. It was this last Sunday, in theory, starting with the Hall of Fame game, which, of course, everyone knows was canceled. But that game was canceled with four and a half hours of notice, I think. I think it was canceled at 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. I think that game was at 8 at night. And still, if you looked at the largest tournament on DraftKings, which is the largest DFS site operator as far as preseason football goes, or the largest one that offers preseason football, out of 15,686 teams in the full largest event that they had, 5,120 of them had one or more players in the Hall of Fame game or didn't submit a lineup at all, and that's a full 33%, just a hair under a third of the field, which moves your expectancy for making money from not that great to incredible when a full one-third of people have basically removed themselves from contention. And again, these were people who...
All those guys get zeros. All those guys get zeros.
Yeah, all those guys get zeros who were picked for that game. So, you know, if you had one guy in that game, you immediately go from having a full lineup on DraftKings, I believe off the top of my head, has nine players in it. If you reduce yourself down to eight players, you're going to really need to nut out those eight players to cash at all. And almost, you know, if you take a zero, a good 98% of the time, you're going to have completely eliminated yourself from any contention of making money. So immediately that contest becomes, you know, minus EV, or when you join a contest that's full and there's some fees taken out of it, assuming everyone is playing on an even field and playing with the same degree of game theory intelligence, you know, your $3 entry fee in that contest was worth $2.60 when it started. Immediately after one game that didn't even happen, your $3 was now worth $4.50. So it's really, and I guess my point is, more so than in the regular season, just paying attention to what's going on, even with just the headlines, even if you're not deep diving, things like, hey, this game was canceled, I should not play anyone in a game that has been canceled, reaps extraordinary benefits. And year after year preseason, we've seen people playing tons of players who have been announced out for days. I'm looking at other things where last year Adrian Peterson was in 11% of lineups week one when he was announced as not playing for several days previous to the first preseason game. Same thing with Ben Roethlisberger. Same thing with plenty of other guys. So it is one really good reason to play is if you're in it to make money, it is a very lucrative time to be able to do that.
I opened one of my 50-50 contests yesterday, and I was just looking at some percentage owned, and Aaron Rodgers was 15% owned.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, Aaron, by the way, and that brings you to another thing, that was pretty crazy anyway. Like, I mean, he might play a quarter. Another thing that I really like is that, at least in the lineup building phase, there's no math involved, because on DraftKings, again, at least, they set everyone's salary to exactly the same. So a lot of the difficulty of playing DFS in general is the mathematics of this guy costs more but has a higher production, and at which positions and where am I going to try to seek value and where am I going to try to score up. And like, there's that whole mathematical step to lineup building that is removed in the preseason. And I actually find this makes it a really ideal entry point into daily fantasy sports for people who are veterans of the season-long game. Because much like in a season-long format, the only math is on the production end of the equation. It's just picking the guys who are going to score the highest. You pick one quarterback, a couple running backs, and you're just picking the guys at each position you think are going to score highest. So it's actually a really nice entry-level drug, if you will, for people who are more used to the season-long game.
So, Eddie, how do we pick quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers? I mean, how do we figure out who to use?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing in the preseason is just opportunity. You're always looking for guys who are just going to be on the field. One of the reasons why NDA DFS might be the easiest one is because production is so thoroughly tied to minutes. Football and baseball are always a little harder to scout than basketball because the number of scoring opportunities per game is a much smaller integer. Football is so touchdown dependent. In baseball, you're only scoring points for things you do offensively, and you only get up four or five times. So even the best baseball player, the guy who's hitting 400, is going to go 0-for-4 every fourth or fifth day. So you can pick up zeros on extremely good plays. In basketball, they're almost always going to score for you. So in football, again, you're looking for opportunity. Like, let's talk about, the Eagles is a good example. They're one of the first games up on the slate of preseason football that starts tomorrow night. You've got Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles, both reasonably healthy at this point, but not 100%. They're both, several-year veterans. They're both really known quantities. So they're not going to be out there a ton. They're not going to expose him to injury in the first of many preseason games, much, if at all. Normally, I would have thought that this would have thrown a lot of onus and opportunity onto Wendell Smallwood, who is the guy really setting up to be the number three there, and there's just out of the draft, they're going to want to see what he can do, get him some game action. He's actually just been ruled out for the first game. So I think you see the most running back touches, and possibly a majority, more than half the touches, for Kenjon Varner. And so really the easiest way to pick is to pick, if you can't do all the teams, pick a few teams, pay really close attention to their beat reporters and their Twitter and everything you can to just figure out, hey, this guy is, several teams will announce, yeah, we're going to give him one series, and then we're going to give him two series, and then this guy is going to play the entire second half. And you have a very easy way of knowing, okay, this guy is going to see, extensive time on the field.
So it's just figuring out what backups are going to get a lot of run.
Sure. I mean, preseason, especially early weeks of preseason, you're going to see much more backups than starters. And it's not just that, but that's the most important thing. Guys who aren't on the field aren't going to score. Guys who are on the field are. So for skill positions, you're looking for guys who are going to play and guys who are going to play more than other guys. So if you look at the various rosters, let's look at a couple other teams that are in that slate of games. If you look at the Falcons, nobody's hurt on the entire Falcons roster, which is bizarre in an NFL team. But right now, I think if you load up their roster on RotoWorld or one of the other excellent sites that cover those teams, I don't think they have an injured player. Whereas if you look at the Ravens, who play Carolina, Steve Smith, Rashad Perriman, Chris Moore, Crockett Gilmore, Dennis Pitta, like five of their top six guys that actually catching the ball are hurt. So between now and when that game kicks off in whatever it is, 30 hours or so, you can pay some attention to everything you can hear out of Ravens camp, and someone will probably say something like, yes, we're going to take a good long look at this guy. That guy becomes in a very good position to slot into your lineups.
Eddie, is there anybody in specific that you want to tout for this weekend?
Well, I mentioned Kenjon Varner. I think he's in a really good situation to see a lot of a lot of activity. I think that game ends up scoring high. I'm going to pay close attention to the Patriots again. Really interested to see what they say about who's going to be taking the quarterback snaps. But again, on that team, if you look at the basically top three receiving targets, I think you're going to have our Edelman, Hogan, and Amendola. Once you hit the regular season, I don't think any of those guys are going to play or play more than a snap or two due to injury and other concerns. So really, if you listen to a team that I expect to throw the ball a lot, that's certainly another team I would want to look at targeting.
Awesome.
Go ahead,
hey,
Ross.
Eddie, we really, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much. And just hearing the logic behind preseason DFS and the Bogut story, you totally redeemed yourself for the Unicorn Heart Fantasy
Just
Feast
when
thing.
I think you can't be any dumber, you do something like this and totally redeem yourself.
And win money for Evan by confirming his Andrew Bogut bias and totally redeem yourself. No, it's awesome, Eddie. I'm glad I'm going to be working with you guys over at fanvice.com. I'm glad you guys are supporting the podcast. Thanks for coming aboard.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Smart dude. I like the logic behind preseason DFS. I think that you said that last year, Evan, but I think Eddie even explained basically a lot better than you're able to. Why that's the case, which I thought was fantastic, almost as fantastic as being able to listen to an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, everything at Audible. Make sure you get the Audible app because it has awesome features like chapter navigation, narration speed control. Evan is a podcast listening freak. My guess is he's all over Audible as well. I told you guys that listen to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast that my wife is all over Audible. It's awesome. I mean, you can download any audio books you want for your commute, working out, whatever. Very, very cool. And you can start a 30-day trial and download your first audiobook for free just by going to audible.com/FF to get started. That's audible.com/FF, as in Frank, Foul Frank, Frank Frankfurter, FF. You got it. And we're going to get Evan's tight ends.
Next meal.
Brian, we need a song here.
Will I win my league if I'm following Evan? Am I drafting Zeke? If I'm following Evan, I'm at the turn. Two picks to burn, but I know I won't go wrong with Tears of Evan.
Yes! So now we might have to do a poll of what you guys like better. Me singing Tears of Evan, Eric Clapton style, or a real professional musician, Scott Sheriff, who he's been in all kinds of bands. I know he was in Kenny Loggins' band for a while. I don't know if he still is. But literally coming up with his own Tears of Evan song that actually sounds good, so that he can get one of the MFL entries. So congratulations, Scott. You got one of the MFL entries just by being that awesome. Evan, what do you think?
Oh, I thought it was awesome. I love the, am I drafting Zeke or whatever?
Am I drafting Zeke? I love it. Dude, I mean, we have unbelievable listeners. You guys are amazing, almost as amazing as the only tier one tight end that Evan has. Surprise, surprise, Evan, it's Gronk. Is this even something that's open for discussion or something worthy of talking about, or should we just move on to tier two?
I mean, just the name of the tier is Gronk.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. So, like, tier two is the guy who outscored Gronk in PPR points per game last year. Tier three, have a chance to be weekly difference makers. Tier four, rest of the every week tight end ones. Tier one, Gronk. I love it. Absolutely love it. And we'll talk more about the value he provides over the guys in the other tiers. But in tier two, which I mentioned, Evan, is the guy who outscored Gronk in PPR points per game last year, Jordan Reed is your tight end too.
Yeah, and he did outscore Gronk in PPR points per game. He missed two games. He suffered five concussions, including his career at Florida. So we know that there are major injury concerns. We know that he can be a difference maker. I like drafting Jordan Reed this year. You know, he usually goes mid-third round. Very often you can get him fourth round. And to me, he's going to remain the Redskins' featured pass catcher. I mean, if you look at the kind of skill sets of the other Redskins receivers, DeSean Jackson is kind of a, you know, he's a deep threat, a little bit of a one trick pony. I mean, I think he's better than that phrase one trick pony suggests, but you know, he's kind of a role player. Pierre Garçon, you know, kind of an underneath possession receiver role player. Jamison Crowder, you know, a lightly used slot receiver role player. And then we have Jordan Reed, who over his last 17 games played with Kirk Cousins has 109 receptions. So he's a difference maker. And, you know, drafting a tight end early kind of puts you behind a little bit, because running backs and wide receivers go off the board swiftly in fantasy drafts. And, you know, expending a top 1, 2, 3, 4 round pick on a tight end theoretically does put you behind a little bit, but you're not drafting, you know, you are drafting these guys because you believe that they can be difference makers. It's not necessarily an optimal decision to draft Rob Gronkowski with a top 11, you know, top 10, 11, 12 pick. It's not necessarily optimal to use a third or fourth round pick on Jordan Reed. But if these guys, you know, can get near their ceilings, and I mean, Rob Gronkowski, you know, the last time that he played with another tight end in a base two tight end offense where Aaron Hernandez was really, really involved in 2011, Rob Gronkowski scored 17 touchdowns. So if he can have a monster year, he can more than enough make up for the fact that he, you know, kind of sets you back a little bit with, you know, with your roster configuration, just by using a super high pick on a position where you only have to start one each week, as opposed to like wide receivers. You know, a lot of leagues require you to start at least 3 and sometimes 4 and 5.
Got it. Very good explanation. Let's move on to tier 3, which are the guys you say have a chance to be weekly difference makers. You've got Greg Olsen, Travis Kelce, and maybe a little bit of a surprise for me, Kobe Fleener.
Yeah, again, guys that have a chance to be weekly difference makers. Greg Olsen has finished as the top 4 fantasy tight end in back-to-back years. I think you could look at the situation and say, well, the trajectory is kind of pointing up on Devin Funchess, perhaps. Kelvin Benjamin is back. So, you know, will Greg Olsen's targets go down? I think ultimately Greg Olsen is the best receiver that Cam Newton has, the most trusted receiver. You know, I'm not too worried about Greg Olsen. The next guy is Travis Kelce, who is a clear-cut top 2 target in his offense. Now, Travis Kelce is a guy who over the past couple of years has received a lot of hype. He's finished as the number 6 overall fantasy tight end in back-to-back years, but he hasn't really been a consistent difference maker for you. So oftentimes he'll be like, people will consider him to be a disappointment, but his ADP is way down this year. I mean, last year I remember him going 4th round a lot, sometimes 5th round, and then he would be considered a good value as a 5th round fantasy pick last year. Now I see him go 6th round, 7th round. So the cost is down. I think that his arrow is still pointing up, especially because I think the Chiefs are going to end up throwing a lot more this season. They had a really, really low volume passing offense because their defense was so good last year, but they're missing Justin Houston now. I don't know when Justin Houston is going to return. Doesn't look like it's going to be early in the season. And if you think back a couple years to what happened when the Chiefs were missing Justin Houston late in the season, I mean, they started to get into some shootouts. That was that same year where they played that 45-44 game against Indianapolis in the playoffs. So I think the Chiefs end up throwing the ball a little bit more than people might expect this year, and that would be good news for Travis Kelce. With Kobe Fleener, you know, he's going to have a big role in one of the NFL's highest volume passing offense, you know, maybe the highest volume passing offense. He was the number six overall fantasy tight end in 2014. I get concerns over whether, you know, how good of a football player that he is. Because I agree with them, but he's also in a great spot for fantasy production on a team that does not have a good defense, that plays a difficult schedule, that has a great quarterback, you know, that is going to be throwing the ball a ton this year. They play indoors. They play a ton of road games indoors as well. And I think that Kobe Fleener has a chance to be a fantasy difference maker this year.
Love it. Let's get into the next tier, and that is the guys that are every week tight end ones in your mind. Eifert, Gates, Delanie Walker, Zach Ertz, Julius Thomas. I guess the only question I would have there would be your level of confidence in Ertz as an every week tight end one, you know, with Trey Burton getting some love, with Celek still being there. I think the other guys we don't even need to comment on, but sell me on Ertz as an every week tight end.
Well, he's probably the guy that I'm down on the most of this group. And he's a guy who gets hyped up a lot every off season. And every season he will have just long stretches where he really doesn't do a whole lot, man. And then he'll blow up for three games, or he'll blow up for one game here, and he'll kind of tease you. Never been a touchdown scorer. You know, go back to his college pedigree. I don't think he ever had more than six touchdowns in a season at Stanford. Hasn't had more than four or five in an NFL season. So those are concerns for me. But, you know, you can paint a pretty good picture of him, too, because we know that he's a talented dude. You know, if you look at the Eagles, how they, you know, their passing game distribution, Zach Ertz should be right there with Jordan Matthews in terms of just leading the team in targets. The opportunity is there. It's just, I think Zach Ertz has become a little bit overrated as a player. Just a guy that, you know, we often fall into this trap of every year, you know, expecting this guy to break out. And, you know, it doesn't always happen. It doesn't happen for some guys. And you know, until Zach Ertz shows me that he can be a big time fantasy tight end for a full season, a big time tight end, I'm going to be a little bit more cautious on him. But again, the name of this tier has a chance to be every week tight end ones, and I do think he has a chance.
The tier five is guys that have a chance to be every week tight ends. Ladarius Green, Gary Barnage, Eric Ebron, Dwayne Allen, and Martellus Bennett. So the first time we see a team with a second guy here. You've got the Patriots tight end two being your overall tight end 15. I get it with Green, Barnage, really even Ebron and Dwayne Allen. Marty B might be the one. I mean, Ebron, I think, is an injury issue right now with however bad his ankle sprain is, obviously. But the other guys are all pretty good players, should get the vast majority of the touches at the tight end position in passing offenses. Got it. Tell me about Marty B being a guy that people draft, because obviously there's a unique dynamic there with him and Gronk.
Right. And he's a kind of polarizing guy in the fantasy community. You know, some people will look at, well, you know, there was a little bit of hype on Scott Chandler. There was a little bit of hype on Tim Wright. And, you know, some people will say, this is just another case of one of those, you know, guy who's going to disappoint. Other people will say, well, you know, there is some precedent for the Patriots to have two big time receiving tight ends. If you look back at Aaron Hernandez, you know, other people will say, well, Martellus Bennett, one of the best players on the Patriots immediately, you know, why would they not use him as like a 70 to 80% player in their offense? And that's kind of where I fall. Now, my ranking doesn't necessarily reflect that, but I mean, if you use my rankings, you're going to be in the mix to get Martellus Bennett in every draft. I mean, he usually goes like tight end 12 to tight end 16, somewhere in there. And I mean, I like to draft Martellus Bennett, but he's also, you know, he's entering a new offense and there's not a ton of certainty with him. But I definitely lean toward the camp where he's going to be a big part of their passing offense. And I mean, I think he's a really good football player. I think he's one of the best combo tight ends in football. And, they have issues at wide receiver, Ross. You know, they Julian Edelman has had 2 foot surgeries since last November. Chris Hogan has some hype on him, but, you know, he's never played a big role in an NFL offense. Danny Amendola, I don't even think he's practicing yet. He had knee and ankle surgeries in the offseason. Malcolm Mitchell is a fourth-round rookie in a complex Patriots passing game. You know, it makes a lot of sense, in my mind, for Martellus Bennett to be essentially an every-down player on this team.
I'm with you. Let's move on to the next tier, which is fantasy backups who could still finish top 12. Jason Witten, Will Tye, Zach Miller, Austin Seferian Jenkins. Witten, I guess I'm a little surprised that you don't think he has a chance to be an every week tight end. Will Tye, I know you're higher on than other people. Zach Miller and Austin Seferian Jenkins, especially Seferian Jenkins, given everything we're hearing out of Tampa, is an interesting one to me that you put him in this category.
Yeah, it's just an upside deal with him. You know, he's been starting to go 15th, 16th round in fantasy drafts. And I mean, he could very easily be a guy that if you draft him, you end up dropping him after 1 or 2 weeks, because right now he's not a starter on the Buccaneers. It looks like Cameron Brait out of Harvard is going to start, your boy from the Ivy League. So it's just an upside thing. I mean, I'm not so sure that it's settled. This is another offense where it would kind of make sense for them to, if ASJ can get his crap together, that they could use a lot of 2 tight end sets. I mean, because they don't have an established third receiver. I think their third receiver right now is Adam Humphries, a second-year undrafted guy out of Clemson. And so it would be a pretty imposing offense if they used a lot of 12 personnel with ASJ, Cameron Brait, Mike Evans, and Vincent Jackson. I mean, that's a lot of big dudes, you know. But it's just an upside thing. I mean, ASJ, we know that he has a ton of ability. I would say that his physical tools are on par with Travis Kelce. It's just, I mean, one beat writer this offseason, I remember, wrote that he's a $10 million talent with a 10 cent head. So,
oof, rough. The other guys you listed here, Ben Watson, Vance McDonald, Jordan Cameron, Charles Clay, Kyle Rudolph, Clive Walford, Jimmy Graham, Richard Rodgers, Lance Kendricks, Jacob Tammy, Richard Rodgers, Jared Cook, Larry Donnell, Cam Brait. I guess, well, how fast things change in the NFL when you've got guys like Charles Clay, Jordan Cameron, Jimmy Graham listed in the others.
I know, and I'm really, really never going to draft a guy coming off a ruptured patellar tendon. I think that that's just going to be a rule for me going forward. It's a horrible, horrible injury, and that's the case with Jimmy Graham. Even if he goes, like, I would probably take a chance on ASJ over Jimmy Graham. Maybe even Richard Rodgers over Jimmy Graham. Just it's such a bad injury. Vance McDonald is pretty interesting. You know, there's a competition in San Francisco for lead tight end jobs. And Garrett Celek actually played ahead of Vance McDonald last year. But then Vance McDonald stepped in the starting lineup when Garrett Celek got hurt. And he was pretty productive with Blaine Gabbert. It was almost like they had some on-field chemistry. But there have been beat writers that have indicated that Vance McDonald might not be a starter over Bruce Miller, who they converted from fullback. But if it's apparent early in the season that Vance McDonald is an every down player for the 49ers, he could absolutely be a guy who we see get 6, 7, 8 targets per game. I think that team is going to be playing from behind a lot. I think that Vance McDonald, you know, runs routes in the area of the field where Blaine Gabbert is most comfortable throwing the football. I think that Vance McDonald is a good sleeper. And I also think that Ben Watson is. You know, I think people have kind of dismissed last season, understandably so, as an outlier year in his career, because it is an outlier. But you know, this is a team where you got Dennis Pitta. He's already injured again. You got Crockett Gilmore. He's injured. Max Williams really didn't show us a whole lot as a rookie, and he just got hurt the other day. And Ben Watson could very well be, you know, just become a very reliable target for Joe Flacco on a team that last year led the NFL in pass attempts. And I don't think they're necessarily going to lead the NFL in pass attempts again this year, but I think their defense is not very good. It's definitely not what it once was. And Mark Trestman, in 14 years as an NFL offensive overseer, in 10 of those 14 years, his offense have finished in the top 10 in the NFL in pass attempts. And the wide receiver core is just, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. You got Mike Wallace, you got Steve Smith coming off the double Achilles rupture. You got Brashad Perryman with the partial ACL tear. You know, you got Kamar Aiken, looks like the only solidified wide receiver right now. So there's a lot of opportunity on a team that's going to throw the ball. And Ben Watson, although it seems like an outlier year last year, he did show that he can be productive. So I like him as a sleeper this year.
Beastly tight end tier breakdown. Huge episode with Fast Eddie of the Fantasy Feast Eaten podcast today, brought to you by FanVice.com. Your home for your daily fantasy sports information needs. Keep an eye out, by the way, for my Tucker in the Trenches segment that will be on FanVice.com every week this season. Make sure you follow those guys at FanVice DFS. For Evan, I'm Ross. We are stuffed wide receivers next week. Make sure, by the way, you're doing what it takes to enter to get some of those free MFL entries. Just send me a sponsor confirmation or to get in the redraft league. It's not that hard. Or send me a Tears of Evan song like Scott Sheriff did. I'm stuffed. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
I did it. I finally did it. I got a new car. I've been talking to you guys about it for a while. I got a new car. I needed one. My other one died. I got a new Denali, and I used TrueCar because why wouldn't I? I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for months now. And it's just a better experience. I mean, you're able to lock in the savings with a dealer on the website. They've got a huge certified dealer network. So if you're not sure how it works, you just go to the TrueCar website or you use the TrueCar app, and they've got this bell curve. It's a pricing curve that shows you exactly what that vehicle you want is going for in your local market. And then you can actually online connect with a TrueCar local certified dealer of your choosing, and you lock in the savings off the MSRP. You just go in, you hand them the certificate that you printed out off your computer, and boom, you're good to go. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar certified dealer network. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.